Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Hell's Bell by Annabelle Anders, narrated by Mary Sarah. Chapter 1. Infatuation. Marcus Roberts, the Earl of Blakely, leaned against the brocaded wall, arms crossed. The gorgeous fellow seemed completely unaware that his good looks drew the gaze of nearly every wallflower present. Miss Emily Goodnight was no exception. Of course, she'd never confess her infatuation to anyone, especially her closest friends. They assumed Emily was immune to such nonsense. She'd gone out of her way, in fact, to perpetuate the opinion. She'd quite intentionally developed her reputation as a practical, rational miss to protect herself from the sting of rejection she'd surely experience otherwise. When she found herself forlornly seated while the comelier ladies danced, she wouldn't feel so pathetic. She pushed her glasses up the bridge of her nose and pretended to watch the dancers in his vicinity. In truth, she secretly watched him. His appeal wasn't only in his looks, but something else. Something nearly unidentifiable. He slouched slightly as he leaned, not bothering to adhere to what was considered appropriate behaviour, and his slightly hooded eyes perused the room lazily. He lifted his broad shoulders, stretching them up and back, drawing Emily's attention to his abdomen, flat and firm-looking. When he tilted his head to one side, a lock of thick chestnut hair fell across his forehead, partially covering one eye. Emily looked away before he caught her staring. Surely he would not remain alone for long. Ah, yes, she was quite right. Mrs. Cromwell, a newly widowed beauty, promenaded past several other ladies to reach him before accidentally dropping her handkerchief at his feet. His bored eyes flicked up and down the woman knowingly before he bent to retrieve the effective wisp of fabric. With a flourish, he bowed and presented it to the raven-haired beauty. A subtle twinkle in his smoky grey eyes revealed his interest in what the widow offered. Emily hated him at that moment, nearly as much as she hated herself for feeling sentimental emotions for such a rake in the first place. Since their first meeting at a formal dinner party, when Emily had stuck her foot in her mouth more than once, she never failed to devolve into a graceless idiot in his presence. Not that she was graceful to begin with, but she floundered with unusual flair on such occasions. Why continue torturing herself? Emily glanced down at her dance card. A few gentlemen who'd approached her friend Rhoda had charitably scribbled their names beside some of the livelier dancers on her own. Those sets would not come up until much later in the evening. Mrs. Cromwell tilted her head back in laughter and then gazed at him from beneath fluttering eyelashes. How did ladybirds do it? What gave them the confidence to flirt so outrageously? Emily peeked from beneath her lashes in the direction of the couple. Lord Blakely was smiling roguishly at the daring woman. He lifted Mrs. Cromwell's hand and pressed his lips to the back of it for longer than was appropriate. As the voluptuous woman giggled and looked away, he turned his face slightly toward Emily. As though he knew her every thought, he dropped one eyelid in an insolent wink. Ah, the rotter! Heat crawled up Emily's neck and into her face. Of course, now she would appear blotched and bothered. Drat! The swine! She turned her legs firmly and stared intently in the opposite direction. She missed Cecily and Sophia. Cecily had married a bounder, but then managed to find true love after all. And how could any man not have fallen in love with the sweet, blonde, lovely Sophia? Good heavens, Sophia was a duchess now, of all things. Of the four wallflowers, Emily and Rhoda remained unattached. Normally Rhoda would be sitting beside her. Rhoda, with her chestnut hair, sultry eyes, and complete lack of nervousness around gentlemen. Surely Rhoda would be the next to become betrothed. In fact, last summer, she practically landed an eminently eligible husband, the heir to a duke. But it had not been meant to be. The heir had died in a tragic accident. Poor Rhoda. Poor Rhoda, indeed. Every single dance on her card had been claimed this evening. Seeing her squired about by a marquis last season had apparently opened the eyes of the fickle gentleman of the temps. Tonight, at the first ball of the season, she seemed the most sought-after lady of them all. The sudden onslaught of attention was uncanny, really.
Sitting alone this evening, Miss Goodnight?
Emily's heart jumped at Lord Blakely's voice. At the same time, his cocksure attitude set her teeth on edge.
Has Miss Mawson abandoned you?
If he requested a dance, Emily thought she might scream. She refused to accept charity in any form. She is quite popular this evening, my lord. Emily stared at his neckcloth. If she stared into his eyes, her brain would cease to function. He would test her, however, by dropping into an exaggerated bow, one foot pointed in her direction.
Have you been claimed for this set? Or will you make me the happiest of men and allow me the pleasure?
A pang shot through her at the words. They almost sounded like a proposal.
Idiot. Fool.
She glanced around, making certain he was, in fact, asking her before rising somewhat haltingly. So much for her pride. I will dance with you, my lord, if that is what you are asking. She continued to avoid his gaze, and in doing so caught Mrs. Cromwell, watching the two of them, with a snide expression. Had he told the lady he would dance with poor Miss Goodnight, a lowly wallflower, in order to prove his gallantry? Unless you'd prefer to dance with Miss Cromwell again. It's really not necessary, you know, dancing with me. Just because we are both well acquainted with Mr. and Mrs. Nottingham. Was she to make a cake of herself, after all? She sounded as bitter as she felt. At last she forced herself to meet his gaze. He'd raised one brow, but extended his arm for her to take, nonetheless.
You should know by now that I lack such manners, Miss Goodnight. Have you not considered I might be seeking your conversation to liven my evening? If I remember correctly, you have a habit of saying the most fascinating things.
Oh, so not charity. He sought to be entertained by her unfortunate habit of failing to maintain her dignity in most social situations. Very well. What else could she say? He was an Earl, after all, and Cecily's husband's closest friend. Pretending this wasn't the Earl of Blakely, her Earl of Blakely, she tucked her hand into his arm and allowed him to lead her onto the floor. Her, but the other dancers weren't lining up for a country dance. It was to be a waltz. She gulped. Her stomach did a quick flip as he placed one hand upon her waist.
So, I'm fascinating, she snorted. Ought I be flattered?
Her hand shook as she placed it on his shoulder. Surely he would feel her trembling when he clasped her other hand in his. If he held her even half as inappropriately as he'd held Mrs. Cromwell, he'd feel everything.
Absolutely.
The music began and he stepped boldly into the dance. Backward. She was to go backward. She struggled to match her feet to his until he paused.
Don't watch your feet.
He released her side for a moment and tipped her chin up to look at him.
I promise I won't dance you into a table or a plant.
His eyes laughed. At least he wasn't condescending. If he'd been condescending, she would have abandoned him then and there. Although she'd learned to waltz years ago, she didn't get much practice. Ah, but now she had the perfect excuse to lose herself in his eyes. His hand once again settled upon her side, exerting just the right amount of pressure for her to know which foot to move. And then they were dancing.
You see,
he teased,
I've only run down a few other couples.
In addition to being extraordinarily good-looking, mysterious and heroic, he also had a delightful sense of humour. No wonder she'd fallen in love with him.
I must say, she admitted without thinking, I was surprised to see you in attendance.
Your father is here, you know, as our Lord and Lady Hartley. Have you reconciled with the Duke, then?
His jaw had tightened at the mention of his father.
He and the Duke of Waters had been estranged for nearly 10 years. Rumour was that Lord Blakely had refused to honour a betrothal made by the Duke when Lord Blakely was much younger. In an effort to bring him up to snuff, the Duke had cut him off. Luckily for the Earl, he'd experienced success in trade. Although members of the Ton did not speak of such, the funds he'd amassed, however, kept Lord Blakely from having to kowtow to his father's wishes. According to Cecily's letters, Lord Blakely was far from destitute.
I won't be chased away from anything by my father.
A steely edge crept into his voice.
Ah, so you have not reconciled then?
He spun her and then pulled her back into his arms.
No.
What of your sister and your mother? Do you speak to them?
She kept herself from flinching as his grip tightened on her hand.
They have been instructed to steer themselves well clear of my rebellious ways.
Did he not realize he was nearly breaking her poor fingers with his tightening grip?
So you remain steadfast in your refusal of the girl, then?
Emily knew this was not something she ought to have brought up. But somehow, her mouth voiced the words of its own accord. Was this what he meant by her fascinating conversation? Perhaps it was fascinating when some of the poor souls stood in her crosshairs, but not nearly as fascinating when he was the subject of her ineptness. At least no one else could overhear their discussion.
How do you know so much of my personal affairs?
And then he shook his head.
Your dear friend Cecily must have shared them with you.
Well, of course. Do you think ladies don't speak of such matters? Her fingers had grown numb by now. And you haven't answered my question.
I suppose this interrogation is my own fault, eh, Miss Goodnight? You are showing me exactly how entertaining you can be.
His comment surprised her. She wished she'd thought of the idea herself.
I'm merely curious.
That is all, my lord.
His eyes no longer danced. She'd made him angry.
Why couldn't she find something light and pleasing to converse about? What sort of topics would be pleasing anyhow? Did you have your hair shorn recently?
She could have groaned.
Did men ever talk about their hair? And with ladies, no less? He threw his head back and laughed. Perhaps it was her awkwardness he found fascinating. She scowled at the thought.
As a matter of fact, I have.
Do you think I've left the sideburns long enough, Miss Goodnight?
Or my valet utilize more pomade?
Oh, no.
They're perfect enough, my lord.
And then his grip on her fingers lightened.
She nearly stumbled and thought to look down at her feet. She forced herself to look into his gaze instead.
As usual, you have not disappointed.
So, it is my social incompetence you find fascinating. She made the statement dully. It felt rather like something of a set-down.
Would you not rather be considered fascinating than a veritable bore? If I were to dance with any other debutante here, I would most certainly find myself subject to the same conversation repeatedly. The weather, the food, the latest styles. I much prefer your forthright manner, as provoking as it can be at times.
His smile was warm, much as a man might bestow upon his sister or a much younger niece. The music came to an end, and most of the couple stepped apart. Another dance would begin momentarily, as most sets contained at least 3. He did not release her.
I do not intend to provoke, my lord, Emily said softly.
Although a good deal of chatter rose up around them, she did not wish to be overheard.
He leaned down.
Pardon?
His ear was only inches from her mouth. He smelled of some subtly exotic spice and cigar. It was not unpleasant. She cleared her throat before speaking around the lump that had suddenly formed there.
I do not intend to provoke, my lord.
He chuckled.
You would not be my dear Miss Goodnight if you acted any differently.
And then the second dance began. She determined to keep her mouth clamped firmly shut throughout this one. She'd already provided him with enough entertainment.
"I will not make good on my father's promise," he said out of nowhere. "If he wishes to remain the obstinate fool that he is, then so be it."
It was almost as though he were speaking to himself. His eyes were pinned upon something behind her. When they spun around, she could see he'd been watching the Duke and Duchess of Waters, as well as his sister, Lady Hartley. A few others mingled around the Lofty family, including the girl Emily was certain had caused the falling out. "She is beautiful," Emily stated boldly.
"She is,"
he agreed.
"But she is not my choice."
Emily snorted again. Lovely sound, really. It was no wonder all the men didn't drop to one knee and propose to her on the spot.
"You think I ought not to have an opinion regarding whom I might marry?"
Most men would be annoyed that a lady had laughed at them. He didn't sound indignant, merely curious. "I think you have refused to allow yourself to form an opinion of the girl. I think you are finding fault with her to thwart your father." Again he turned her and then twirled her. The sensation was dizzying in more than one way. Physically, as the spinning affected her balance, but in her heart as well. When he led her around the floor so confidently, she felt feminine and pretty, despite her dull brown hair, despite her plain figure, despite her blasted spectacles.
"Perhaps there is some truth in your words,"
he smiled down at her.
"Do you hope to heal the wound between Waters and myself? Is that it? You will convince me that I ought to woo her? Court her?"
He laughed. He was teasing her once again. "You must marry eventually," she pointed out, which was not something one ever told Lord Blakely.
"Not so, Miss Goodnight. Not so."
He was smiling, but a cold, hard look returned to his eyes.
"I'd as soon marry you as I will do my father's bidding."
She stumbled. Gosh darn it! All those feminine feelings that had come over her just a moment before transformed into a heightened awareness of her own insignificance. "Such the flatterer you are." And upon hearing her words, he seemed to catch himself.
Do not take offence. I'd as soon marry anyone rather than give in to my father's wishes."
She wished she understood what had caused such bitterness. The dance came to an end. Rather than await the third piece to begin, Emily curtsied and excused herself. Perhaps she could escape to the library until her other promised sets began. Such an arrogant and selfish man. She'd tell him where to go if he ever asked her to marry him. She nearly sobbed at the thought. Fool. Emily. You fool. Marcus watched Miss Goodnight scurry away. Such an intriguing little mouse. He'd not intended the comment to be insulting. And the truth of it was, he'd married just about anyone except for the woman his father had betrothed him to. He'd never do his father's bidding again. A heaviness set upon him as he watched his sister and her husband conversing with his betrothed's father, Lord Quimberley. It was one thing to ignore his father's existence, quite another for her sister and mother to ignore his own. He could live without the allowance and access to his family's resources and property. Denying him the love of his sister and mother hurt, he admitted grudgingly. Marcus glanced around in search of a certain widow. Ah, there she was. At least he could satisfy other needs. He jerked his head in the direction of the foyer. Mrs. Cromwell, Vivian, licked her lips leisurely and then nodded. At the thought of his intentions, his cock stiffened. Best remove himself before he embarrassed anyone who might be paying attention. This wasn't the first time he'd had an assignation in the Crabtree's library. He'd found the architecture quite handy in its design. A gentleman in the midst of swiving could easily hear anyone who approached, as footsteps tended to echo conveniently loud before an intruder pushed open the heavy door. He arrived first, surprised to find someone had carelessly left a few candles burning. Ah, well, familiar with his surroundings, he poured himself a dram of scotch, downed it, poured another, downed it as well, and then one last one. The heat of the liqueur burned his chest and removed the edge he'd had ever since hearing the major domo announce his father and mother.
Damn the bastard to hell.
Telltale footsteps echoed, indicating he'd soon be forgetting even more.
Marcus?
Her voice sounded low, throaty with desire. Marcus turned and watched as the lovely widow, hips swaying provocatively, approached him. Soft, curvaceous and willing, this woman was made for sex. Her pale soft arms wound around his neck. A bit too much perfume for his tastes, but nonetheless he took command of her mouth.
He didn't feel romantic. He didn't feel seductive. He walked the woman backward until the backs of her thighs pressed into the settee. Squeezing her buttocks, he clarified his intentions.
This is what you want?
He pressed himself against her. In answer, she raised one hand and lowered her bodice.
This is what you want?
She thrust her chest forward. No set of breasts were ever the same. Marcus took hold of one, as though testing its weight, and squeezed.
Turn around, he ordered.
Her eyes, which until that moment had been half-closed and sleepy-looking, suddenly flew open.
Naughty man.
Marcus took hold of her waist, turned her, and bent her over the city. Gathering her skirts, he raised them while she spread her legs. Mrs. Cromwell knew what was to come. He waited for his mood to improve as he ended his falls. She was wet and soft and willing
and beautiful.
That was all that he required.
Hell, even beauty was unnecessary for what he needed.
Oh, Marcus, oh yes, harder, Marcus, you nasty man.
As he buried himself methodically, listening to her moans, he wished he'd taken another shot of scotch. Her voice grated. He wished she'd shut the hell up.
Chapter 2. An Educational Experience. Perched upon the catwalk, hidden by a tall column, Emily had thought she'd find some solitude in the old library. And when Lord Blakely had entered, she'd intended to announce her presence, but she had not. He'd appeared bothered, haunted, so instead she settled quietly into a corner and watched him down nearly half a bottle of their host's scotch. Oh, drat, someone else was coming. She curled herself into a tighter ball and practically held her breath. It would be too embarrassing to be discovered now. Even more so upon realizing she was witnessing an assignation. Perhaps watching Marcus Roberts in such a tawdry situation would squelch this ridiculous infatuation once and for all. A tiny crack tore through her heart at the thought. But she ignored this sensation and forced her natural scientific curiosity to take over. She almost felt sorry for Mrs. Cromwell. Almost. The woman promptly pulled down her bodice and then allowed Lord Blakely to bend her over the arm of the settee.
Emily cringed. She had once discovered a picture book in her father's library. Illustrations of nude men and women engaged in coitus. Sometimes more than two. All the captions had been written in Latin. She surmised that her exposure to such literature prevented her from falling into the vapours at the sight of Mrs. Cromwell's heaving bosom. And then again, when he gathered the lady's skirts and lifted them nearly to her face. She never expected, however, to witness such a crude exhibition. When she realised what Lord Blakely was doing with his mentula, one of her hands fluttered to her chest. Oh my! Her eyes nearly popped out of her head at the sight of it, straining, purplish and red. It was so much larger than those depicted in the drawings, and almost as though it had a life of its own. It bobbed against his trousers before he'd taken control of it, and she'd never have guessed at the colours. Perhaps if she could take a closer look.
it looked almost angry. How did they not hear her heart beating? She wished she had a paper and pencil to document her impressions, for when he began his rhythmic thrusts, she found the sounds they made quite intriguing. Not the mutterings of Mrs. Cromwell, but the thuds and squishes produced by the arch itself, slapping noises and an occasional sucking sound. When she wasn't watching the place where they were joined, Emily watched his face. His eyes were closed and his lips pressed together in a tight line. Occasionally, he appeared in pain or concerned. Yes, the vertical lines appearing in the centre of his forehead caused him to appear distraught. How odd. When he increased his pace, as the widow demanded, he seemed to plough into her with even greater intensity, and yet Lord Blakely did not seem nearly as engaged as Mrs. Cromwell. He didn't verbally respond to her, even once. He didn't moan or groan in ecstasy. He merely worked himself steadily, similar to riding a horse while it galloped. Even when he reached his novissime occultum, he murmured not a single word of appreciation or satisfaction. Nary a sound. He simply stood there straining, clutching at the woman's hips, until gathering his wits again. "Marcus, my love! Oh, my dear, you're as magnificent as ever!" Mrs. Cromwell continued her long narrative in review of his performance, until he disengaged himself and slapped her once on the rounding, protruding buttocks. Emily searched his expression for any manner of pleasure or fulfilment. Nothing. He did not seem nearly as satisfied as he'd looked after drinking the scotch. In fact, disgust raced across his features. Ought she to pity Mrs. Cromwell? No, the woman had come to him, and she'd welcomed such carnal attentions without demanding anything in return. And the lady had seemed to enjoy it. Emily wanted to stretch. Her back and knees were stiff, and she had an itch on her ankle. Oh, heavens, though, she dared not move. Mrs. Cromwell was now reclining on the settee, watching Lord Blakely pour himself another drink. "If you're so unhappy at seeing the Duke here in London, why don't you come with me down to Brighton? Forget about the season this year. I'm sure you and I could find some way to entertain ourselves." The Earl tossed back his drink and then set the glass down. "Ah, Vivian, my dear, as delightful of an offer as that is, I must decline." No explanation. Ouch. "You wish to return to the ballroom. Alone. Your reputation." Emily thought she would burst into tears if a man spoke to her thusly after. Well, it was nothing she'd ever have to fear. She'd likely go to her grave with her virtue intact. Mrs. Cromwell's lips pursed as she pouted for all of 10 seconds before gathering her skirts round her. "I imagine I won't be the first woman to call you a bastard, Marcus."
"Nor the last," he agreed.
With as much dignity as one could possibly manage following such an indiscretion, the widow swept out of the room. The door slammed closed behind her. It didn't matter how regally the lady ever acted in public again. Emily would only recall the image of the daft strumpet bent over the settee with her skirts about her face. Oh, but her foot was itching now, too. She must not be discovered. She'd be mortified. Marcus couldn't help but agree with Vivian's assessment of his character. Likely most women of his acquaintance had the same opinion. He hadn't always been thus, but, oh well. Perhaps he ought to have accepted Vivian's offer to go to Brighton. He could have visited a few of his company's vendors, avoided the marriage trap set for him here in town. But no, the lady would have expected more than he'd ever be willing to give. Furthermore, he refused to leave town merely to avoid seeing his father. He scrubbed one hand down his face. This encounter with Vivian had done nothing more than leave him feeling sordid. Any normal man would be basking in sexual satisfaction right now. He wondered at this thought. Was he no longer normal? Had this bitterness ruined...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?